review a process that came, if I'm correct, in 2011, 2012. But eventually the motion that was put in the assembly by the chief whip was the review of the Moneyvilles Act. And this is part of the process going forward. Got an agenda in front of you. There will be a presentation from the legal services by Nathika Jenkins on the background mandate and issues for discussion. Documents were circulated in June 2015, around about the 9th of June. On inputs made by Advocate Jenkins, the PBO, and the National Treasury, discussions between the PBO and the National Treasury. Quite a while back. But now we are here to take this forward. After that, the presentation by the PBO and then the discussion and then the way forward. Advocate Jenkins, attendance registers must be circulated. Are there any apologies? Are there any apologies, Mr. Reto, Select Committee Finance?
Thank you, Mr. Gaila.
Honorable Gaila. Yes. All right, Honorable Gaila. Honorable Karim, please come here. Is that the only apology, Honorable Gaila? Yes, I know you are here.
From the Standing Commission of Relations, Dr. Pig and Mr. White Russell.
Yes, please note that in your minute from the Standing Committee. Finance. Right, you must note that for your committee. The next committee on appropriations. Any representative? Welcome also to the chair. We are four chairs. From the two committees, the HOP, Finance Appropriations, and the NA, the Standing Committees and Appropriations, and the Standing Committee of Finance, and all the members present and staff that assisted in arranging this workshop. Thank you, thank you. Honorable Karim?
Yeah. Just one thing. Contrary to rumors that we are finishing early because I need to go and buy a new tie for tomorrow, so on I say, I just want to clarify that the other committee, chairperson, instructed me that we can't sit for the whole day. Right? That was a decision made by the chairs of the other committee. So, can we get some clarity? Are we finishing at 1 or 1:30? Because it is explained that the reason we were late was because it's beyond our control. We have to meet your expectations. What time are we finishing? That was even nice.
According to agenda I've got in front of me, it's 13:30, half past one, depending on how we are going to work, go about this meeting.
Thank you, Chairperson, and welcome, Chairperson's members, colleagues, and everyone else. Chair, I think we just need to come back to set the background for the purpose of this workshop. We're mostly busy with legislation and draft legislation from Treasury. The purpose of today's workshop, I think, if I might speak to members, is to try and adopt a different approach. In other words, what I'm going to be presenting, the CEO, I can assume that if I'm wrong, they're going to present a proposal. In other words, these are proposals coming through various discussions over the years. How can we make the money more than we proceed in related matters? Actually, hopefully the last time today I say it like that, I can say the money more. How can we make it more suited for Parliament's purpose, and how can we make it suited for its purpose to provide oversight of the budget? So what I'm asking, I'm dealing with members, is if one sees something in the proposal or in the slide and one feels confused by it, or one feels that it's wrong, the purpose is that we can provoke conversation so that we can get to a point to say that there are certain questions that we need to be asked, time to amend the future legislation final time again. We haven't been successful up to now, in my view, due to the work constraints or the amount of work that may go through the core committee. And when we get there every year, like we are going to get in the next few months through the introduction of the budget and passing of the various future legislation, we want to either pull out our own hair or pull out somebody else's toenails or something, when there's all kinds of litigation being threatened, because we are taking 15 days or 20 days with the fiscal framework, or there wasn't a joint meeting, or we received a meeting from National Treasury on the division of revenue bill before the fiscal framework was passed. And all these questions keep on coming from the committee staff and legal services to say, how do we deal with this? Is this legal? Is this illegal? So I think the crux of what I'm saying is, let's make ourselves compliant by changing the law. Let's adapt the law to our practical purposes so that we can comply with it, and so that we can give effect to the purpose of it, which is to enhance oversight over the national budget. That is how I understand it. The presentation I'm going to make, and I am going to try and keep within a projected time of it, finish between 1 and 2 or 1 and 2. Just some background to the Act. What is the resolution of the Fifth Parliament of this Parliament today? What does it mean? Because that's the mandate for the committee to be dealing with amending the Money Water Act. The resolution speaks to various areas, some procedures that must be developed in the rules. That I think falls outside the ambit of the committee. It's a rules matter, and it has been addressed much. Of course, if the Act has changed, what must be the rules are still compliant with the Act. The PBO issue, the PBO will make their own presentation. I've highlighted one or two things. I think that's one thing to say, which is not different from the PBO, but just the perspective I take on it. Some consequential matters. I'll deal with it. There are issues in the Act as it stands which need to be revised, wording changed to include new words that's used by National Treasury when it comes to the 40 standard. There's some errors in the Act. Subsection 6 should be subsection 7. There's some superfluous provisions in the Act that we can do away with if we put amendments to it. And then there's the small matter of, not for everybody, but the normal standards for provincial legislatures. When the Act was drafted, we put normal standards there, because we wanted to have uniformity across the legislative sector in how to deal with the budget. The question is, did we go too far? Did we go into the area of the reserve for provincial legislatures? Are allowed in terms of the Constitution to make their own money rules from the Ministry. And then the way forward, what can we expect after this workshop and one or two proposals? So just some background, the Act was not introduced by government departments, it's Parliament only. It was a result of the oversight and accountability model. It was a project, a draft of this model that lasted before we really wanted to start after conception of it, probably in 1999. And maybe just after that, the new quarter report that went into a start seeing the effect of the new quarter report, start seeing the draft oversight and accountability model, start seeing the implementation of oversight and accountability model, and then there were various project groups within this oversight and accountability project. One of them was the budget project, or the budget group, and from there, from that, there was impetus to put a money book procedure there, which then went to the finance committee. So, the only critical thing to remember there is that the Money Book Act is there to give effect to the oversight function. It is not to change policy. And that's what you find in that. So when you're dealing with reviewing that, it's critical to understand that. So if you try to input on fiscal policy through the Act, we need to go back to when we drafted this Act and say, can we do that? Is it constitutionally correct to do that? My view on that, and my view is that it's not constitutionally correct to do that, because the policy, the majority, the main policy responsibility lies with the executive, not the Parliament. Parliament has oversight over it, so we need to give respect to our oversight issues, and that's what we need to put out. In that, as a main, we finalized the oversight and accountability model in 2009. In the same year, we also brought the Money Laws Act into operation. The President signed it and brought it into operation. There was a review process initiated in 2012, 24 May 2012. There was a resolution.
report was submitted, but the committee at that stage, I think it was under the former Minister of Finance, Nene, did not get to actually amend the actual approach. There was just a further report. And it was at that time that the Kozuluna Solidarity supporters made a submission on the constitutionality on the norms and standards. So that submission still comes from the fourth parliament, but you can still pay attention to it when you're looking at the action, you have the opportunity to amend it. On 19 May last year, the National Assembly adopted their resolution on the three statutes and word for word. In short, we asked the Standing Committee on Finance in consultation with the Standing Committee on Appropriation. Now, this is a National Assembly resolution, so they can only ask their own committee to deal with it. So I'm not saying that the Select Committee on Finance and Appropriation are not welcome in terms of being effective as well. Critical that all four people deal with this because you certainly a lot of times they don't have to repeat. So with a resolution from the National Assembly, hence focusing on the National Assembly to sustain, confer and review the Act. Specifically look at the application of the Act, look at the time frame, look at the sequencing, I'll say more about that. Is it working? Report any proposed amendments please to the House. Progress report was submitted. This resolution, contrary to the one of 2012, did not specifically mention the CBO, but this resolution is wide enough to deal with all aspects in the Money Growth Act. So there's basically three things that is asked in the resolution, three specific issues. One, the time frames and sequencing. Two, the rules. And three, management of the public, parliament of the public. If I can start with the first one, the time frame provided in the Act. There's various time frames, I'm not sure if I need to go through it in a pedantic way, but one, the PRRR, the oversight report, annual evaluation of the performance of government departments. The Act requires that this is submitted by the National Assembly. In other words, the NA committee submits it and reports. And this report must be tabled, I think, prior to the adoption of the interim budget. So there are certain questions that have been raised. I wouldn't highlight these questions as the most critical. I'll get to those which are critical and I will mention them. But questions that were raised, should the NCOP not play a role in the oversight of government departments? Given the breach of our also expense to all committee departments. Now, that's a question that has been raised is something to consider. And another question in this regard that has been raised is, shouldn't the BRRR report be submitted prior to the introduction of the NCGTS? Further, the Committee on Appropriations and Finance that deals with the NCGTS can actually have all those information, all the information that the government needs to evaluate the NCGTS to assess. So, I would suggest in any event that we need solid input from committee section in this regard, in terms of time frame. Do we have time to shorten the space between the future of our system? Well, not in any event, time frame prior to the introduction of the NCGTS, which is sort of end of September, my view, we do that regularly. But whether we use that information to then weigh the NCGTS is a different question. What resources do we use that? I mean, the resource question is actually underpinning all of these changes that we want to make. As I said, Chair, I'm going to move on from that. I think the critical question in that area, or the most critical in that area, should the NCOP also be participating in the future process as the Act stands for the responsibility of the National Assembly. Chairperson, the next bullet there deals with the NCDPS itself, where the Act says it must be reported on after safety, 30 days after safety. That means I want to have a very dodgy legal opinion to say after should be ready within. And the detection might enjoy that opinion, let's put it that way. Because it certainly assists us, but I think in the meantime the constitutional court made a similar ruling at one stage. So I'm a little bit vindicated, but it's in the fact it should be written, not altered. Yeah. So that's the correction that's required. Dealing with the real nuts and bolts of the time frame issue is two parts. One, the 60 days to do the fiscal framework. Then the
time period to do the division of revenue bill and it's time period to do the appropriation. These are fixed time frames that you have to comply with. And within those time frames, there are time frames for the public hearing, there are time frames for the minister to respond, whether it's 2 days or 3 days, in some instances, 4 days. Question, is this appropriate? It's very inflexible guidelines. If one wants to loosen up Parliament's programming ability, one needs to look at words like reasonable, within a reasonable time. And in fact, when we think of public participation, when we think of allowing a minister to respond to a or to a proposed amendment in the appropriation bill or a proposed amendment in the division of revenue bill, depending on the extent or the scope of that amendment, 2 days might be too short or 4 days might be too long. So the question is not just to make it easy, it is really what is reasonable, what is the question of the answer I'm doing my presentation today. Certainly when it comes to public participation, if there is an issue in the budget that really needs proper consultation, just to be facetious and excuse me for that, let's look at the issue of pre-tertiary education. In the amount of consultation, public consultation that would be necessary to get something like that properly ventilated in the public, it certainly require more than a change to a tax law of say 1 or 2% of your personal income tax. So there's that issue, and the Constitutional Court in the doctors provide issue when we determine on public participation. Put down guidelines and say the public participation and one looks at what the latest judgment on public participation, which is called the most advanced access movement, took the restitution of land based on public participation. The court says, in Northern Catholicism, that you might agree with this, to do public participation in Northern Catholic, the court says, go out there. Some people travel 2 to 3 days to get there, and you have people 2 to 3 days to respond to certain submissions to the bill. What that means, what reasonable costing might not be reasonable in the point. So there's scope to say, let's make these periods rather reasonable. We'll allow Parliament to come to the activities and programs, and it will certainly comply with the law. So we'll get, I'll get some more input on that. So just on the last 2 bullets there, the revenue bill, very short provision in the money bill act on that. Well, that are sooner the process of introducing the revenue bill, sooner the time and when they should be introduced last year, during the revenue bill, during the end of the year, when the time and is very tight. In any event, usually they come June, July, or just after that record, last year, which is the next year, and we understand why this thing happens, why the government elections might happen. But it's something to consider, again, just a consideration issue that's highlighted. The adjustment budget, I don't have to say too much about it, suffers from the same problem as the normal budget. Time frame, the sequence. We cannot look at the division of revenue amendment, or we cannot look at the adjustment appropriation until the fiscal framework is finished. So those rules are floating in the air, if I may put it like that, until both budgets are adopted. That's an issue we can address. And we're trying to show that in the next slide. You see here how we are at the moment, the first slide. Fiscal framework, the division of revenue bill and appropriation bill. We have to do the fiscal framework first. We have to finalize the fiscal framework before the division of revenue bill and the appropriation bill can be referred. And it's credit bottom from my experience since the fact that in operation. And then dealing with the relationship between the division of revenue bill and the appropriation bill, we cannot propose any amendments, in other words, really consider the nuts and bolts of the appropriation bill until the division of revenue was passed. The reason that is because we want to see how they line up. Now, it's a bit of a square issue, I consider it like that. Now, I'm trying to make it easy for us, and negative about the way it is, because it is appropriate to keep it like it is. Nothing stopping us from looking to say it's good. The risks are too big to change, and we have to change the way we operate within Parliament. Fantastic. Yeah. So
proposal is to ensure that we still have the alignment. In other words, we don't want to propose amendments to the Division of Revenue Bill that's going to be in contrast to contradict the appropriate already approved fiscal framework. And we do not want to make changes in the appropriation bill that's going to contradict what's said in the Division of Revenue Bill. So the proposal is rather than to hold it back and have this overcautious approach, rather let the bills be referred as are introduced, like any other one, but we schedule or we sequence the report. So we cannot report on the Division of Revenue Bill or the appropriation bill unless Parliament has adopted the fiscal framework. We cannot report on the appropriation bill. You can consider your amendment, but you cannot report on it until the Division of Revenue Bill is passed. So it allows the committee to find out its work, but not to report it. So once we go back and look, if everything is done, what will be needed is to get the resources. Do we have resources in committee or in legal services for that? To give that assurance that there's compliance with the fiscal framework when you're going to report to the Division of Revenue Bill, compliance with the Division of Revenue Bill and the fiscal framework when you're reporting on appropriation. That is the proposal, and that to me is the critical issues to the exercise of reviewing the money for that. The rules and surpluses, I'm not going to say too much about the rules. Last year, many Fridays, with some of the members here, some of my colleagues here, in fact, we reviewed the MA rules, we reviewed the joint rules, the NCOP rules, it was in the process of being reviewed. So far, so good. I could say I don't see any contradiction between the rules, which are very general in nature, not specifically applicable to how we deal with the budget. There are rule changes that are asking people to confer and to report and so forth, but I don't see a problem there. In any event, if there is an issue, that should go to the rules committee and then refer to the subcommittee and the review. So I don't think, and I think under question, we have to make it a critical issue. Parliamentary Budget Office is going to make their own presentation on how they see and the challenges that they've experienced. Put on the first issue that we know that the PBO is developed in terms of Section 15, it's established in terms of Section 15. At the time when the Act was drafted, it was envisaged that the PBO would be an independent entity with a close relationship to Parliament, and run by the Parliament. This is how the Act was drafted. For those members and colleagues who were not there at the time, it was drafted really at the end of 2008 and finalized before the end of that year. The Section 50 has a challenge, and my problem with Section 50 is specifically it doesn't set out governing principles and how financial management of the PBO must be done. It speaks of a transfer, it requires a 3-year rolling budget, it requires a reporting back to Parliament, it doesn't say how it must happen. To the S&P 8, or PFM 8, and as well as the financial management of the provincial legislature. Such reporting is done through the Parliament Office. So when a minister needs to report to Parliament, they submit the report to Parliament, that goes to the PO and the office. So there's somewhat of a relationship, and we need to bring it out in the Act. But we need the most critical point is, what are the responsibilities of the judge? If the director is the accounting officer of the PBO, which was the intention when the Act was drawn, the Act is very quiet. There's very little. What are the relations? What is the fiduciary responsibility? In the document for today, I tried to cut and paste. It's not something that should be doing all universities in the United States. But I've cut and pasted some provisions out of the Financial Sector Regulation Book that deals with the Prudential Authority. The Prudential Authority is a terrific person, but within the administration of the Reserve Tax. And the NCOP will deal with that more than we get there. But I try to make it, to just adapt it a little bit so that there's something to talk about to provoke some sort of how can we actually deal with the PBO in the, or within the policy which was set out in 2009 when the Act was adopted, and to give it the leg to be done with, the PBO will take that further. I call that the whole process just alignment with the SMPP.
get the due diligence principle, make sure that the director knows exactly what is expected. And on this point, one must just remember that, unlike private citizens, public citizens can only do what's allowed by law. The principle of legality allows us to do only what the law allows us to do. Of course, we're sort of ancillary to our functions, but if the PBO does not have, the director does not have a function set out in the law, then the PBO, of course, the director is not competent to do that function. Some consequential matters, chairperson, the language of the Act, I've mentioned as areas which further consideration, the section C of this Act applies to amendments. The Act doesn't apply to amendments anymore. We use it even if we don't have to. So that's not true. There's some corrections that must be done in subsection 6, must be examined. The issue of the adjustment budget requires joint meeting or joint session or joint meeting, but because of the 76 legislation, I mustn't read too much into a joint meeting. Certainly the committee can't report joint meeting. So we've changed that to make it read better, to follow the easier, the clear process of going through the national meeting. And the new definitions and so forth that's been taken. The handout on the proposal for section 15 also includes the issue which is not a small issue. Should the executive authority be allowed to make regulations for the financial management of the PBO? Because the executive authority can certainly do that for following financial management. The executive authority in the future is just a chairperson, section 16 of the Act, the Omnibus Act, provides that there is a schedule attached to it, which says that if when provinces, or if provinces make their money building amendment procedure, they must comply with certain standards. It goes into quite a lot of detail about having the two committees, an appropriation committee and a finance committee, and how they need to confer, and when they need to confer, and how much time they need to give to a minister to respond, etc., etc. The argument is that Section 123, much like 1773 of the Constitution, gives this authority to enact legislation to give effect to amending the budget to provincialism. So the question is, can Parliament direct or guide provinces with this schedule? And to say to them, this is what you're having to put in. Now, there's somewhere a line which can be crossed when you really say to a provincial inquisitor, this is how you're acting to be. Because we are going beyond what the Constitution is about. Some of the areas which says this is an oversight issue is basically restating what the Constitution is saying. The provincial cannot change the provincial budget that conflicts with the division of revenue or the division of act when it comes into operation. For the simple reason, provinces don't have that many revenue raising opportunities. So then we have conflict of legislation if they do that. But some of it can be kept, but it's basically restating what's in the Constitution, and some of it I find is going too far. At the time, it was really seen that provinces need to be in uniformity, but you never really, when the law was passed upon the president's signature, never really sat and thought it through, are we not going too far? And of course, there were some political issues involved to have the schedule there. I think the chairperson, the way forward, the short meeting, because the meeting itself can decide on that. I've put some policy issues on the second page of the draft memo. I was asked to do it. It's not a draft memo, it's a draft agenda. I did not try to determine anything specific. I made a draft agenda just for the purpose of getting the ball rolling. But there's a second page to that which sets out certain policy issues. Certain questions that we can deal with. It's by no means exhaustive, but it is something to start with. But the way forward in any event, after the workshop or after further consultation, we need to come up sometime or the other and take off the amendment law. Chairperson on my right is my colleague, Martin Samuel Prince, who has done a draft amendment law. So from the further inputs we get, we can put that in the draft amendment law. not built from scratch, so we are quite far with that. That bill, when the committee is happy with it, should go through a public participation process from there on to the court, to the House. That's the way the bill was drafted in the first instance, and that's how we've amended. Just for me, from now, that's it. There's another sort of track changes document, which I'm not sure we should deal with during this meeting. It's not a policy issue for discussion. What would be interesting for members to actually amplify the policy discussion to see how could it find its way into a draft book, so we can look at that document with the track changes to see where we make the changes, we're removing a specific day, into reasonable, and saying no. Both the division of revenue bill and the appropriation bill can be referred, it doesn't have to be waiting for finding the finding spot. So give the members some idea of what it should look like, subject to your decisions, you don't have to refer to that.
Yeah, we're working as a collective, it's not my decision, but the workshop is going to decide. And you must just refresh my mind, referring to the amendments proposed in terms of the Act, have the same document circulated in 2015, August?
Now in the process. As you all know, and you
provided mainly support to the full committee of finance and appropriations in the two houses. We've been operational since January 2014. The PPO support is functioned because of the Act, and the Act clearly takes the function. At the operational level, again, the PPO continues to face the challenges that we've indicated, and not only some of the challenges here as we go through. The challenges are mainly administrative, politically in terms of the support and the political will for the PPO. I don't think there's been a problem. There's been a lot of support from our chair, our members, and also from the advisory board. And I think the administrative challenges, our challenges, I think we should be squaring the face in this regard. And I'll talk through some of this as we move on here into the process. The status of the PPO in law, and according to the PPO, I think as Mr. Jensen mentioned, the PPO is an independent entity. It has its own enabling legislation, it has its own personnel, it is funded to the transfer of power. And also, members, these are administrative issues that can be sorted out, that they can be addressed. These are not policy. In practice, the PPO operates within the administration of Parliament without a defined model as mandated in the Act. So, limited government and administration because of this administrative issue, lack of a service delivery model, the legal status and framework, although you have an Act, is still debated. And of course, the funding model. Transfer, and how do we see this transfer? Again, as far as I'm concerned, as we work in the civil service, as we work out inside and outside of the administration, we should be standing for a in terms of the status of the PPO within law, the Money Bill Act talks about a transfer of funds to the PPO. Thus far, for the last 4 years, the PPO has received it as a tough burden of administration. And that goes with the authority of the sub-program. So, if, for example, says in the Act that the director must appoint deputy directors and staff, unfortunately, administratively, the director is not allowed to do this. This is given to the human resources executive, and the director sees it as a manager to the hospital. The director, in consultation with the committee, which I do, must
the four chairs
of the finance and advisory committee served as the advisory board to the parliamentary budget office. So we have this kind of advisory board which guides overall the work of the CBO and makes its report to the executive authority in this. The director will have the same duties as an accounting officer, which is the service of the CBLA. It will be responsible for both parts, the points of the in terms of the Act. In terms of the service delivery model, enable a direct service to a focus the defense of first, which either could be adopted by an agency or entity, under the direct control of the executive authority, and of course, the advisory board. In terms of the legal status, the framework, it's a separate juristic person in terms of the enabling legislation. Original powers of the enabling legislation is also provided in the Act. In terms of funding models, there's a transfer. And there is a possibility that you don't need to expand and create another empire, but to share services with funding in the future. So, this is how the kind of models are called for as we look at. In terms of international experiences, Chair, and I think, you know, I've gone through this unsurprised in the last 4 years in terms of explaining what the CBO does and our international experiences, Chair. So let me reiterate this. And let me quote from the African Parliamentary Network that we have. The prerequisite for a successful CBO is non-partisanship, but independence. It must be clear independence, both financial and human resources. It must be professional. You must be able to access information, and you must be able to develop your needs. Of course, critical to the whole thing is political growth and political support for the CBO. If that's not there, I don't think we need a CBO in the long term. It is not an administration. Financial and human resources, and of course, transparency. So some of the experiences that we face, some of the challenges that we face, and we have been addressing this constantly over the last 4 years. We've not had much success in dealing with these issues. The FMPPA does not provide for transfers with specific entities such as the CBO. So we need to work on those kinds of issues administratively. We need to implement the Money Bond Act in this regard. There could be a service level agreement between the CBO and Parliament to clarify shared services, protocols, etc. So this is just in terms of not establishing a massive institution, but utilizing, you know, the resources within Parliament to support and build on the CBO in this regard. So I'm not saying, you know, CBO should have 50,000 staff on HR, legal services, etc. But it's leverage in terms of making it efficient in this regard. We talk about the 3-year budget as approved by the executive authority and the delegated powers of the director should be other things are issues around the guiding principles or regulations and the implementation of the Act, timeline, and responsibility of provincial legislation. And we've had a lot of interaction with provincial legislation on a part-time basis to assist them in this regard in establishing their own oversight mechanism. Not part of our work, but I think it's part of what we owe in terms of building capacity in this regard. Of course, what this has resulted in honorable members is a lack of capacity to carry out work. Yes, I think given our track record, we have tried to deliver under very difficult circumstances. And the reason for this, one of the reasons, is that my approach as a director has been, let us address and ensure that we provide the best service and best support and best research to our members. And while we do this, our members will see the benefits of the CBO and also see the value in terms of political role for the membership of the CBO. So that's been our approach thus far. I've not really engaged in administrative battles, political battles to address it. I thought that we let us get the right staff in place, let us deliver, and let's ensure that our members are actually going to work that we can do. The way forward, Honourable Members, Of course, you know, the approval of the industry is critical, and the Council of People will be to formalize the 3-year rolling cycle, to formalize the accountability to the executive authority, by, of course, the advisory board, to agree on the shared services formula, implement the money goals in terms of the community. So, Chair, again, I've repeated this many times. In terms of how we see the operations going forward, in terms of, as I said, the model, the advisory panel, the accountability, the funding, the legislative power of the director. Because without the fundamental measures, you can't function. And it's been a tough 4 years to function in an environment where these constraints, you know, are not existing. So, Chair, in summary, let me reiterate, I believe first in terms of the Act, and the way I read the Act as well, that the CBO is an independent entity by law, performs in terms of its mandate. The challenges that we experience have limited our capacity to deliver. We've also been asked to do additional work by our social forces, for example, related to the NDC. And I think we've undertaken that with the limited resources that we've had. We look for you to improve the model so that we may eventually move forward. And of course, the protocols in terms of the know-how and the administrative functions for that. Honourable members, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity. As I said, this is probably the most important committee for me that I've attended in my 4 years at Congress. And I thank you for your support and your guidance that you provide. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Commissioner Ed, and the work that CBO is doing. If we look back where we started and where we are today, yes, there was progress. In respect of the challenges and sometimes frustrations. All the members who've listened now to Mr. Jenkins, his presentation, and to the CEO, I can hand over to co-chair for Mr. Karim to take us through the second part of our agenda. What is very important then is that we will have to go through the documentation. Get your fingers into it, because it's upon us to take the process, to take the process forward. Mr. Karim, thank you.
It's not of my own doing. Charles Peter feels that maybe I should chair. I think the subject is that he's too top of the person, too nice of the person, unlike me. So he says, go and finish on time. Never mind, I'll speak a lot. Okay, over to you, Mr. Yes, my friend, number one, here your numbering. Are you edging towards one? Just put your hand up. Okay, who's there on this side? On that side, Sandy 3. Oh, yeah, very early. Oh, very early. Okay, please. Go for it, please. You're up for half an hour each because nobody else
is. Oh, wow. Thank you, Chairperson. Yeah, Chairperson, the presentation by Advocate Jenkins referred. Unfortunately, the slides are not numbered, so I might just find it difficult to point out which page. Nevertheless, I'll skip straight into the question that I'm sure you'll be catching. The bullet point that says chairpersons of finance and appropriations committees and relevant house chairpersons act as the advisory board to consult about structured conditions. Now, Professor Dodd also expanded on that and I digested what he said. My question is what is the motivation behind that specific clause or the change? What I'm trying to get at is to what level is that transparent enough when only the chairpersons will make up the advisory board. I want to know what is the motivation behind that one. And then quickly, if I might just move to Professor Dodd's presentation, again, the pages are not numbered, forgive me for that, but I think it's point number 14. When the position of director is vacant or if the director is unable to fulfill the duties, etc. On that particular point, number 14,
What I want to find out is, should there not be a stipulation in terms of the timeline exactly? If you read the clause 14, should there not be a timeline, or can the person act indefinitely, or like what happens, for example, in local government, when they have all the municipal managers that are acting indefinitely, should there not be a timeline on that particular clause? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thanks to Frank and Prof for the presentation. I was party to the trends, and mostly a lot of the debate around the formation of the office, and so it goes back a long way, and the question of the advisory board was contentious at the time and remains so. That will be something we have to look at. But what I do find disappointing is the lack of capacity being provided to such an important institution for Parliament. And so we really need to take that very, very seriously and ensure that the capacity is there and the independence is there. One of the frustrations I think that we have experienced since the operation started is, if I step back to the time we were talking about, one of the exciting things was the services we get as an individual entity. And of course, we haven't been able to do at all because of the lack of capacity. And really, we've got to make sure that aspect of the PBO is put in place, because it simply can't work just through energy chairs. And if that requires a greater allocation of resources, so be it, because the importance of the institution is far greater than a few rands. And so, given the strength that we've had with your team, I think you've really produced a great team, produced some very, very good work, but we've now got to take the next major step for your organization. Thank
you. Actually, this debate is a whole day. We had one, because we cannot have close over. Let me make this comment. The time has come where we don't just ask questions, but implement the decisions that we are taking. First, let me start with the presentation made by Alexis Jenkins. He raised the fundamental question about the role of fiscal policy and distribution of revenue translating into appropriation. My understanding is that the fiscal policy directs how you're going to divide the revenue and how you're going to appropriate it. What should not happen is a situation where fiscal policy comes from your ability to divide the revenue and appropriate it accordingly. The fiscal policy should be in such a way that it's flexible enough that these changes need to be taken. And the past experience of the demand for more allocations for universities is a typical example of what the fiscal framework should be like. So moving forward, when we deal with fiscal policy, we should be able to look at the events that unfold towards the division of revenue and eventually to appropriate. So there must be space created to be able to engage with the flexibility that we do. So that method should be expanded of a need to be taken care of appropriately. Secondly, you speak about the role of schedule. You see, we don't have a federal state where legislators can take their own decisions alone. The legislators are actually taking cue from national fiscal policy. So if in the schedule a decision has been taken that affects local government or provincial government, it's supposed to be implemented. And it's for us as parliament to follow through that that implementation too little too few, because National Assembly does not trade directly with province. It does go through the National Council of Province. Then the National Council of Province becomes the house that's supposed to ensure that implementation of those papers is taking place, including the responses of ministers to the issues that are raised in the chamber. And we need a template, and I've been raising this from an administrative level. We need a template that can follow those schedules that when decisions have been taken, the template keeps us reminding you on the need to implement. A template similar to a template utilized by the Ulster General when we follow two management letters, two government departments with their constitution taking course to them in scope for implementation. So that's a template that will assist us to achieve what we're asking. And then let's move to the budget office as a jurisdiction. You made a very critical example about the role of the HSR within SAR taking a specific role. For instance, when SAR wants to investigate them, that work is done by the FSC that will make sure that that is the HDR. So we need to give the due power of the budget office. Look at the decision that must be made. It's a constitutional framework in ESA. It's not about you as an individual. The act that establishes the PBO gives the power to determine. So when transfers are made, it's not a first program issue, bro. It's a budgetary stipulation that must come as a separate line item where that budget is given to PBO to enable it to function. And it's not only an administrative function. There's a power here where you take responsibility for service delivery implementation and taking accountability. Therefore, you don't limit the power of the director. Because once you do that, and you see, let's just smuggle in this question about the role of the finance chair. You see, the finance chair acts like, you know, board of directors in any corporate environment. They give guidance, but the director becomes the CEO. That's the person who's in charge. The person is in charge of the program, the life function items, including the budget. So, to give a scenario, you say this is the budget, and you say that you need as a budget office, and this is the service you're going to provide to members of parliament in terms of the legislative framework. It will feed in terms of when we come to the question of me, when we come to you as members of parliament asking you to, you will have the capacity to do that because you will be able to do your own program themselves. Therefore, the speaker, when he engages with the Minister of Finance, should be able to say, no, this type of budget that you give us reduces the budget office to a line function office, which is not the case in terms of the When we look at service level agreement, between who and who is the top going to sign service level agreement? It's between the high office, not between the Secretary of Parliament, not the person like that. Because what it happens that way, it reduces your responsibility. It reduces this office to a high function. It's not supposed to be in the organogram. It stands alone as part of how you structure the website. So maybe there's a need for the review. The review of the website in terms of how the structure and the relationship is being done. Because what is it falls under the Secretary of Defense limit? In terms of policy coordination, it will give the team to relook at the fiscal policy. Because when we come to talk and say, yes, this is the government's fiscal policy, you believe that Parliament should follow that rule. The independence of the budget office comes in. That element will be able to say to us, this is the, because these are competent individuals who are empowered to be able to read the economic outlook of the country and say, if we move this to this direction, it will not work. It will answer certain questions for instance. Why will you say, where will you say, and I'm saying why will you say, where will you say, Do you want to impose what actually is right? And how do we implement it? Do you want to have a non-peaceful sector? How would it work? If the budget will say, in terms of the research capacity that we have, and based on the fact that government was able to give us information that we wanted, and I'm highlighting this one, on the basis that my past experience is that when we needed the budget office to give us certain documents that we can use to determine policy decisions, it was difficult for them because they banned all documents that they had. And I want to know that's very important. We have competent individuals who do not have adequate information to make analysis on our behalf of funds. So the type of decisions that we take were not very informed. And I'm not looking up to see the discussion. I'm very concerned that when we're looking forward, we're not concerned that for political questions, but to understand our role as funds, right? And not easy for our things. And this is forward. So, when we move forward, Chair, and we now we're looking into the way forward. One, we are removing the SAP program. Two, it gives the director the power that needs to be there, based on the constitutional articulation. Three, we do the transfer program. We give it those budgetary stipulations of 3 years by the that needs to be in place. We need to formalize and we formalize accountability because then we can say, because we gave you all this power, now can you account to us in terms of our truth and the board led by the government. Because it's there, we're not going to remove it. Those are your higher structure in terms of the components you need to kind of consult. And then we approve, we give it the approval that you need. And then we make sure that the legislature follows the consultant and that they work with the way to keep implementing its own policy approach, fundamentally different from the fiscal approach that we as the national government is taking. And we have created that flexibility to look at policy changes as and when they need to. So as to how you structure the relationship between the appropriation, the division of revenue, and the framework, it's an issue of semantics about how you deal with data and how you relate to the SCOP going forward, which those who are dealing with programs and the remote committee can deal with that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anybody else? I'll help on the speaking. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, another great idea. You kind of focused on the last thing, and that was the CBO, and then forget about what happened half an hour ago. So my apologies for missing out on the issue that Frank was talking about. But frankly, one of the concerns that we had is the kind of parallel process that we've been running with the NGOP. And are you suggesting that in fact we should embed that in the rules, if I'm hearing you correctly? Because, and that's my understanding, I think it's important, that my understanding is that you have two houses of Parliament for specific reasons. If we are going to move to a point where both houses are being the same thing at the same time, then why have two? And so, I don't have a position. I'm asking, how this would fit in with our constitutional requirements of having two houses. And then the BRRR process, again, the Constitution specifically makes that a National Assembly because we're dealing with national departments. And so the suggestion that a house that was structured in a way that does deal with national legislation, but primarily in its impact on provinces and other spheres of government and local government. Surely that would just slow the whole process down, and one of the main concerns I think all of us share is that we try, or any time, to do too much and too little time. So the expanding of the veto bar to NCOP participation seems to me to be going the wrong way in a timing category, but also possibly in a constitutional way.
Right. Mr. General Blanche,
No, I'm
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to start where my colleagues live now. I think it's very important that we guide against, you know, the independence of the two houses and the reason why we have it. You know, if we venture too much into joint statements and stuff, you know, we are running the risk that the checks and balances that is meant by the two houses is going to be jeopardized. So that is just what I want to say on that. Coming to what the present title of the PBO, I think there is general consensus among ourselves that they are very important and they need to be capacitated. The frustration at the moment is that they are not capacitated enough as far as I'm concerned. And therefore, they cannot necessarily always render the service to, you know, to the house and to specific members that I think they would like to do or what we're expecting them from doing. So I really think there's general consensus about it. I think there's a necessity to review the whole setup again, the question of the independence and to what extent they should be independent. You know, that is obviously something that we will have to revisit again, I think. The one thing that I think we should guard against is to create another monstrosity, another huge department that, you know, with all the stuff, blah, blah, blah. I think that, you know, things can be, to a certain extent, addressed by proper service level agreement, etc., the budgeting process, blah, blah, blah. But I think that is necessary. Chairperson, then my last concern is just on Advocate Jenkins' presentation. And it's the same issue that my colleague here also addressed. If you go back to that one, you know, piece in there, I'll just read it. Chairperson of Finance and Appropriation Committee and relevant House chairpersons act as advisory board to consult about structure and conditions of service of the PBO. My concern, Chairperson, we are trying to run a democratic system here in Parliament. And the position is, and this is not coming from a political angle now, you are going to end up, all this person are going to be from the ruling party, whoever they are and what state. And apparently, as it stands, we will not be able to debate it. You are not going to get input from opposition parties, and that is just my concern. I can certainly not support something like that. Thank you, Deborah.
Yes, Mr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have to say, maybe in a sense, duplicate has been said already, but I just think some of the things need to be emphasized. If I remember rightly, last year we went through this process of rather a controversial and adversarial party we were having, particularly in the Appropriations Committee, because of the time frame. And I would have imagined that the reason, part of the reason that we're sitting with this exercise is specifically as a result of that, where we said there hadn't been enough time and for specific things to happen. And as Advocate Jenkins correctly said, well, to paraphrase what he said in a sense, if you've got a law that you can't really implement, then it's not really worth having. So it needs to be practical. We need to be able to have whatever rules and regulations we have, we need to be careful of practical implementation. And that is basically not the case. The time frames we have from the whole BRR process through the parts of the various fiscal framework and so on is too cramped and doesn't allow enough time for the proper things to happen. All we're going to end up doing is this rush here, a box tick, we've done that. We're not actually addressing the real issue, and that's to have proper oversight of the budget. And is it correct? The budget we're actually going to approve eventually is achieving the purpose that you have. So I think it's very important that we look into that aspect of it. The actual practicality. And I think the suggestions that the Advocate Jenkins is making are very sound in that respect, that we need framework now at the moment, as we know, has its limitations and its problems. Just going on from there as well, I want to support Advocate Jenkins' proposal that the Parliamentary Budget Office be made a juristic person, because that establishes it as a separate entity. A juristic person is a separate person in law. It has its own identity. It's not part of Parliament. It's a freestanding, separate, independent institution. And if it has to be funded through a budget line, that's fine, because it's got to get its money from somewhere. But I think that's going to emphasize the fact that it's not here to dance the children who want to put on their buttons, but they have to just fulfill their function in terms of the law and do it in an independent way with as much capacity as they can get with the budget that's allowed them. Thank you.
Now the left hand side is mic'd. It's a problem of Joseph's also mic'd. It's now the third week since the public hearing was held here, chaired by and the leadership must take cognizance of that. The country is watching us in any case.
Yeah. No, Chair, I just want to remind members, especially from the opposition, that, you know, you cannot divorce our own ideological orientation and our own political agenda as a ruling party. Ultimately, if there is no deliver, it is the ruling party that must account. And therefore, there is nothing wrong with having chair being the board of the TPO. Because the budget is the instrument by which you implement your program. Otherwise, then we must just, it's like, you know, there is a tendency that is happening these days, and where, you know, the ruling, the DA in particular, sometimes they think we are co-ruling this kind. They are in opposition. They will get there at some point. And I think that has got to be clear, because when they come here, they will not accommodate us. And let's be frank about that, so that there is no ambiguity on this thing. We want the budget to do what we want it to do. We lean more towards the poor. The DA leans more towards the rich. And it makes perfect sense that the only way we can address these huge development sessions is through a budget. And that is why we must have an input and we must actually oversee the CPO. They must wait for their say. Thank you, Chair.
Can I just say something? Marcos is not speaking for the ALC on one issue. She said they will get there.
It won't come.
They must wait their turn. If Marcos is not here tomorrow in the State of Nation address, you must know it. Summary expulsion. I report her to the FC's office tomorrow. My home girl, know-how.
Good morning, members. My name is Perrin Kronik. I work for the National Assembly Table. I just wanted to pick up on one issue that relates to Advocate Jenkins' presentation, and that relates to the rules that need to be developed to implement the Act. And I think, you know, we have looked at what kinds of things the rules would have to address. And I think it might be necessary that before this committee adopts an amendment bill, that there's some engagement with, you know, with the different role players in terms of looking at the rules before the Act is passed. And I'll just give you an example. One of the areas where the Act says the rules must be developed is the engagement that must take place between the different committees. So, for example, when the Standing Committee on Appropriations in the National Assembly is looking to amend the Appropriations Bill, because only that committee can amend, it must do so in consultation with other committees. Now, how that works and what kind of engagement can take place and when, what are the time constraints, that must be developed in the rules. And that's a very, very important part of the process. So you don't get committees doing things on their own without consulting portfolio committees and, in the case of the NCP selected. So some work, I think, has to be done on the rules, on looking at how the Act affects the rules. And we could obviously, at the table, and I think at the NCP table and at the legal service, work and look at those issues and make proposals before the committee actually adopts an amendment bill.
There's also, I think it's a workshop, right, and it's not harmful. We have Mrs. Rosemary Zemane. She's a member of the public, but she shows a very active interest in the work of the Finance Committee. So strictly speaking, my friend, I think you represent a massive of this. Like we were elected in 2014, thousands of years ago. So I don't think there's any problem. Speak your mind. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. President. Good morning, everybody. As I already have said my name, I put only one point that I want to raise with the presentation here. That is that under the way forward, NCC should develop own policies. To me, this thing, it says to me, they are supposed to be away from the government policy. And it gives me again to say, they are the directors which are going to report, obliged to report to the parliament any inappropriate political or executive interference to prevent the office from providing independent, objective and professional advice on matters related to the budget and other money bills. What I think is, when they are supposed to come now for that budget, including the interfered by their organization problems, it's going to be difficult to them. So they must be aware that if they are creating their own policies without government policies, how are they going to confront the parliament to say, we have the problem here in terms of the budget and so forth and so forth. That's the only thing that I see, not the other. It's appropriate with their budget here. With the information, in fact, in the creation of the independence of their institution. Thank you.
Master Tole, and then Chairperson Moai was I'm very tempted to say no, because he sat me down when he was chairing the NC caucus a few months ago. A shy, unassuming, obedient, untalkative person with me. But the coachee of being nice said, no, I have to allow you to make this question. So therefore, I'm forced to allow Comrade Amahai to speak. Want to go?
Thank you, Chair Patrick. I just want to emphasize my support for this bulletproof one under aligned to the FMCPLA. Chairperson of Finance and Appropriation Committee and relevant House Chairperson act as advisory body to consult about structure and conditions of the system. That is very important. And why it is important is because exactly because they come from the ruling party. I have made my request about what he's talking about, a budget. What is a budget? A budget is an instrument with which a ruling party expresses its point. So there is 100% support for this one. It is very appropriate. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome to the discussion. This is the previous person who are going to be dealing with some amendments that will enable us for more strategic engagement during the budget process.
not suggest that the NOP should create similar structures that exist in the NOP. Obviously, because of the complex nature of human leaders in carry in the NOP and existence of intergovernmental forums, so that we do not duplicate what the Constitution, I think, Section 65 of the Constitution articulates about the oversight mandate that the NPA must give. So we may have to discuss how best, how best does the NPA articulate these two intergovernmental forums, but I'm creating the same question. In any case, BRR plays joint nation official role, but it's more around the prioritization of the budget within the MTS
subsection. Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, why is 100% correct? Looking at Section 5 of the Moneyboss Act as it stands now, doesn't allow for the NCP committees to engage in the feasible approaches, but there are select committees that deal with the departments and the reports. And you pick it up in the letters that you find every morning in your pigeonhole. Even now, there's committees that are doing that. So they go beyond the time frame as stated in the Moneyboss Act. Excuse me. Chairperson, the other very important point linking up with Honorable Mohai is a 6-week cycle in the NCP. Referring to the NTBBS, the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill. Provinces are crying that we are rushing this through the provincial phase. When we go to provinces, we do briefings, they want to have public hearings. There must be more space created. And Chairperson, I can't see why can Parliament not work until the 15th of December. I'm still looking for that person to give me the reasons. And we made this proposal, Chair, after the elections in 2009, the first time we dealt with this money bill act in the workshop. Yes, and we checked it today. But when you make such a proposal, some eyes will that big. Why can't we work longer? Then we can accommodate the challenges and make work easy for us and do thorough work. That's a 6-week cycle, Chair. The other very important point is the administrative leg that was identified in the PBO presentation and also the analysis by Honorable Tobias. I think it's very important, Chair, that there must be an urgent discussion with the Speaker regarding these issues in terms of the Act and the Financial Management of Parliament Act. That is a discussion that needs urgent attention. Chair, yes, that's all from my side.
Some quick things. One is, clearly what we're doing here is to strengthen. The aim here is to strengthen our capacity to have far more effective oversight than we've been able to do until now, especially in the context of 0.4% growth rate and dim prospects for reaching 5% in terms of the NDP by start. So really, we have to be far more effective than we've been. So I really think, you know, underlying what some of the members are saying to the society, there's no need to be unduly party political about actually. And there's no need to use my terms slide in things that don't really belong here right now. Because what that does is it polarizes ANC members. And members tend to take an extremely opposite view as well. So what I'm saying in short is, I would plead, and I think all of us, the co-chairs, Mohai, Comrade Pinky, Comrade Shah, myself, let's dilute the inter-party issue if we can avoid it. Secondly, some of the issues we are raising are not for legislative amendments. They are administrative issues. They are around the parliamentary program. They are around the rules of parliament. And they are around the board and its more effective oversight role over the PBO. I think the fundamental issue is time. But time is related to capacity and resources. In other words, you can have more time. But if you can
now Bakele is open. We have got Antonio Manamela, you've got Hester Mohube, right from your side, and so on and so on. And they're very good. And they make life for the NHS much easier. But they can't match those people in prison. We've been there for 20 years, they travel around the world and stuff. So you can have more time. But have you got the capacity? So we can all demand more time. What are we going to do with it? All it means that they're given more scope. Instead of delivering the report within 48 hours in Esther, they'll get 72 hours, or maybe more than that. But can they match, let's say, these man more on the other as well, the Fuzile, the Vitas as well? Actually, because those guys, 25 hours a day, 8 days a week, they're on the job. Whatever our ideological or policy differences with treasury, frankly, they're world class in mind. Technically, I don't agree with them often. But hey, the technical quality of what they bring. And maybe it's useful to say, I'm the subcommittee, I think I said one committee for 48 hours. But I think five committees I said. So let's go on to the next thing very quickly. If you look at the time issue, I have read, when I came in, I was befuddled, why is there a time constraint? It's ridiculous. That's the study of this one. When I engaged with Minister Nene, who by the way shared this thing, I always tease him about, did you know you're going to. I asked Nene, I said, why are you guys for this? He explained very good reason why he did it. I don't know all of it, right? But amongst the things he and Treasury, the DG told me one day, is you're going to have a problem with Treasury and its cycle. The cycle can be, what they call it? The budget cycle that they have. Now, Treasury is not here. Are they here? Can we insist, they must be here. Because they have to hear us. Because Treasury has got strong views about how if we extend the time, maybe Frank, you know the argument, how if we extend the time, it's going to make life very difficult for the budget cycle. Secondly, Comrade Nene pushes back at me and says, you go to the Speaker's office and ask them, you have to extend the term of Parliament. You might also have to change the date for the Public Finance Management Act requirements for annual reports. Now the question that arises also, we can have more time, but in finance, for example, we are told by the leader of government business, his office, we have got 10 additional bills this year. Now, I ask you, the insurance bill was tabled in Parliament in November 2015. We had public hearings yesterday. And you know what? We're only going to look at the bill in April. There isn't a single spot we've got available. So the question is, how in the Finance Committee with 10 bills, even if you had more time to process the Money Bills Act requirements, how are you going to do it? Where are you going to get the time? Okay. So the next thing very quickly is the Appropriation Committee working with other committees. Let's get real. It is very difficult. Nobody is to blame to get two committees to meet, let alone all the committees. I really pity you, chairperson of Appropriations and work and so on. It's really tough. I don't know how much of that gets done. But I think that is a very good point. And for that, we have to have some space. So the relation between the Municipal House and the MCDP cycle, I think Frank Jacobs has raised this thing. On the issue of the parliamentary budget office, I really think, to be quite frank, no sane, sensible chair of finance, for example, I can't speak to anybody else, would want to serve on the budget PGO board. Actually, it's the budget. Actually, you know what? Frankly, if I had my own personal way while I'm chair, I don't want to sit on the floor. Because I've got too much to do. I'm sure it applies. So actually, before you have any ideas that somehow it's a base for power, actually, it's just a boring pedestrian administrative role. Frankly, who is it? My brother, tell him what? You is it? Was it the other guy, the guy you know, so they got to say? What's that guy? Use Yeah. Yeah. Frankly, you know what? If I had my own way, I'd swap with him. You're listening to the national question, right? So, you know, I mean, actually, if you want to say it, I wish you could. Right? So, what I'm trying to say is, can I say something, please, with due respect to the opposition? Of course, we will, like any party anywhere in the world, the Social Democrats in Sweden in the 60s, with their close to 70% vote, would want to use structures, so called, for their own end. Frankly, it doesn't happen. Whether you believe it or not, it doesn't. It's a drudgery. I have to rush there, eat that horrible food. You don't know what it's like. Really, actually, it's boring. Right? But, you know, frankly, you know, I'm not sorry, but Makoti is not right, for one, that you would ever come to power. I think maybe, I wish you do come to power so that Isaac and Pereblanc can serve on that board and see how utterly excruciatingly boring it is, right? So get bored. Frankly, there's nothing there. On the issue of manipulation of PBO, please, all politicians manipulate. It's not happening yet. In fact, the fact that Muhammad, my friend, I can't be honest, friend in the sense of a collective term. Okay, I can't say comrade, right? Though you are a comrade, everybody knows that, they can Google you and find out who you are. The fact is, it's not, you can't blame the ANC that we had 62.6% of the vote. Never mind the aberration last August, that's what I was generous about. It's over now. The fact is, the vast majority of people vote ANC, therefore the vast majority of civil servants will be ANC. What do you expect? Right. So, I'm going to plead with you. There's no such thing. But the one point that I think constrains a certain DA member that's not here, has gone, to put it mildly, harassed some of the members of the parliamentary board. Remember the word he used, I've been teasing the ladies in our committee. They don't do it even if an ANC individual member goes here. In other words, if Makosi or Tandi wants something done, they have to go through the strategy. Your guy, what's his name, your predecessor came to me, to put it to the committee, investment. You know, what's his name, that nice fellow, unlike you, what's his name? The previous guy.
No,
the very nice guy, Sorry, what's the name? My course is getting annoyed. Right, okay, I'm tired.
I'm supporting you, Chair. I'm saying.
That nice guy.
Unlike them.
That's what we're fighting.
We have to be respected to that.
You make this up for yourself, right? In the DA. Because there's no. You know what I really like about you, Tandi, today? You're so right there. Sitting right there was Michael Sack. A wonderful finance committee member on both sides. Michael Sack made that point, right? I forgot about it. You know what? Tandi is taking it too easy for you. In two senses. You know what? You are right. We shouldn't just speak up. We should look at actually, is the fiscal framework supposed to be so rigid? Michael Sack gave us this idea, which is now reported, right? Where he said, like you have in the US now, the fiscal framework, maybe you know about it, right? You know, it's actually, we allow certain flexibility for unforeseen and unpredictable circumstances. The fiscal framework is not so rigid. But how are you raising that issue? Should the fiscal framework be as it is? How could we have anticipated? Well, we could, but we didn't. Right? Fully, in the sense, nobody would have done it. The students are private, right? Now, I think that's a very novel, very innovative point, actually. And Michael Sack raised it earlier this year. That's something I think we need to engage Treasury about. I think she's taking it much more transformatively than I think, we have thought about. The other final two things is, you see, this is, no matter what advice we give from whoever, either independent or otherwise they are, ultimately, they are political choices. Professor Jai has become the most brilliant erudite input. Ultimately, it's our choice. And we may make the wrong decision, but that's our democracy works, and the voters will sanction us if we do. So, although the PBO role is very important, and so on, I think, Tandi, again, you've gone ahead. This idea was to have a brainstorming session, a workshop. But now what we're doing is we're taking decisions. Frankly, I agree with your decision for what it's worth. All of them. He said, let's just do these three or four things. Mm-hmm. On the PBO, we don't have a choice. It's not a party political matter. They must be what they are supposed to be in terms of the Moneyball Act. And the board is failing. Well, let me start myself. Not the board, country party. I think I should be a more effective board member. I think it's not fair on Professor Jai. I agree fully with Charlotte. We should have a meeting with the speaker. To remind you, the chair of the board is actually Cedric Frolic on behalf of the speaker's office. And to be fair to Cedric, he's very committed to a strong PBO. But there's a variety of reasons it's not happening, which are not because of a lack of political will or commitment to the law. It's a million things. There's no money and this and that. And their power bases and the administration, policy security, yet another issue, etc. So it's like a normal parliament anywhere in the world. It's not like conspiracy theory. Yeah. Finally, I really think that I should say this about the PBO, I'm sure my colleagues will agree. They use their resources very effectively, actually. With very limited resources, they work very hard and they do reasonably well. They would be able to do better if we ensure what we should, which is let the structure and the role of the PBO be what we as Parliament decided it should be. And if that means tackling the administration, and in fact our very own Speaker, so be it. The Speaker ultimately is responsible for the legislation of the Parliament. So I really think, you know, we've gone further than one thought we would. And I think it's right. Let's not have a workshop where we just brainstorm and come back. So what I would like is Rachele and Antonio and Esther and so on and Friday to actually say this wasn't just a workshop to clarify. It's a workshop where 5 or 6 decisions were taken. And I think all 3 decisions that Tandy proposed, I fully supported your decision on the speech of Paul and so on. I really think this workshop has gone further than covering text. I imagine it would. And I thank the members, not just the 2 of you, Mohammed and Frank, for your very helpful input. Let's just do this rather than come back and end this workshop. Thank you. Over to you.
Sorry, go ahead. In consultation, as everybody knows, it means we must agree. Government department, you don't have to meet.
transparency and to create something better. I just accept it like that. I didn't hear it like that, but I'm just trying to explain what it is that we want to do with the practice that is before. And it is really just to make it operative. The issue of an acting director, yes, there could be a time limit. That is the direction that the public service board are going in any event. So that is an option, a good idea. The issue of the BRRR and the role of the NCFP, I would agree, the way I read the constitution is that the National Assembly maintain oversight over the executive authority. And the NCFP has a different mandate by bringing provincial interests to the national state. What has happened during the past years is more and more questions have been asked, why are we not including the NCFP in this process? What is wrong? So, we try to open the door to say, yes, there is a role for the NCFP, but what exactly must the role be? I think it's a debatable point. It's something that must comply with the Constitution. And the two houses certainly do not have capacity, and they do not have the constitutional authority to indicate each other. So there are some changes that we can look into. Rather than making an amendment as it is in the draft at the moment, Parliament must do a meter for house. Is there a way to identify which houses must be what? And again, how does this fit into the capacity of the two houses? It's a resource issue. The question on there's a present a parallel process running with these honourable leaders. The only parallel process that runs during the process of the BRRR is the fiscal frame. The fiscal frame is not legislation. So both houses can look at the fiscal frame at the same time. But as it stands at the moment, until both houses have finalized that, you cannot refer the division of revenue bill and the appropriation bill. So the parallel process as it is with the fiscal framework should continue. I think a joint meeting to deal with the fiscal framework and then to report. We need to carbon copy of each report and they adopt it on the same day. I think there's nothing wrong constitutionally with that. I think it works. But to loosen up and to let the committee, especially the appropriations committee, so they can start looking at the board, get the briefing on the board, and have their public hearing. I think that will all make sense. The issue of public hearing in any event, there have been substantive changes made in any legislation. One should engage the public again. Unless it comes straight from the public into the law profession, committees decide to do it. The constitution requires that we have public engagement of all these issues. I think enough has been said about the issue of the flexible fiscal framework. And I think Parliament and the committee here today can certainly look at that. I mean, the fiscal framework, as Tony and I said, the fiscal framework in the BRRR and the NCDPS reports are all the fiscal framework is not something that's enforced on Parliament. Parliament has oversight over the fiscal framework. They can change it and they can direct their executive how they like it. And if it doesn't give effect to it without sufficient reason, Parliament is in power to change that fiscal framework. The issue of the schedules and the provincial legislatures complying with that, my argument there, the constitution, you correctly interpret the constitution. Provincial legislatures cannot change their own budget, which falls outside the division of revenue. That's not possible. They do not have revenue raising power unless they get a specific permission from the minister. That is raised, I think, maybe some gambling tax, but that's not the case. So they have to comply with that. So one can put guidelines in as guidelines. The problem I have with the schedule is at the moment, section 16 reads, provincial legislatures must adhere to the norms and standards. And when it goes to the norms and standards, it sets out exactly what committees there must be and what they should do and how they should report. So there, I think, legitimately one could ask, are we not overstepping the constitutional boundary? Or wasn't it overstepped? Some of the questions that Ron has dealt with, some of the issues that you've raised, two formal approaches, the formal approach to the houses, the board issue that you raised. So I want to emphasize here, if you create boxes, people are going to have a tick box approach. That, I think, is one of the shortcomings of the Act as it stands at the moment, because we can actually tick those boxes. Did we do it in the second day? Yes. Did we have a public hearing? Yes.
if we give the minister an opportunity to respond, yes. But is there substance in it? The act is not clear on that. And when we look at how the legislation is moving towards from tick box compliance to substantive compliance, I think we can have that same approach with this issue as well. The CBO is a juristic person, maybe Professor Jai wants to, I'm not going to comment on that, I think there's the intention from the beginning was to have that. And one can look at the FSR bill that is in the NCOP now. That is the prudential authority, the juristic person who is in the administration of the Reserve Bank. How does it operate? We can engage with National Treasury, by the way, but I had a call from National Treasury who requested whether they may. I would like to address from the public. Thank you very much for your question. I think, as I understand your question, is that the PBO's approach to fiscal policy must be independent. And I think that is exactly what we're trying to do. And not just independent, we need those wheels of the motor cars to be pumped up and sealed in the tank. To do that, one must say, well, how can we then give the authority within the CBO to do that? I think the last thing, that is what we said in 2008 and I'm in the draft, it does not help to say, well, the parties are the sources of resources, therefore the CBO is short. There must be a prioritization. And if the budget oversight is a high priority, then certainly resources must show that and should follow that priority. And that's where it all comes from. But certainly, the idea is not to regurgitate or to be influenced by the executive in any of it, or by anybody. I mean, that's the whole idea of creating an independent budget. Mohai, I think I've addressed some of your questions in time frames for this. Maybe the issue of time frame, which is also raised by Surplus and Cabinet. We work in an annual budget cycle, so that's good news and bad news. Bad news is that we don't have more than an annual cycle. We don't have more days to do what we want to do, so we can't really create more time with the amendments in the bill. That's not going to happen. We only have the amount of time that we can change policy progress. But what we're trying to do is to say this from Friday to from Monday to Friday, this is what you must do. We're trying to say that should circumstances require, you can take a little bit longer on this one or a little bit shorter on the other one. But we can't create more time for ourselves because there's an annual budget cycle. So that's where we are stuck in. The time frames that we put in, we try to work out at this time. I can get those conversations we had at the same time to see how can we break up the annual cycle into various segments to do what we want to do. My answer to that, Chairperson, would be, well, we have the annual cycle. Treasury needs to, and with Parliament, needs to come up with a solution to say this is how we're going to abate these levies. They want us to pass the Division of Revenue Bill, specifically when it comes to new programs in the Division of Revenue, prior to 1 day, prior to the start of the financial year. We want them to submit certain documents by a certain time. If we need to put it in legislation, I think we need to put it in legislation, but I still think we are trying to put shackles around our feet when we say we have to do the fiscal framework in this and that. We don't know how complicated it is, it's complicated. Specifically with the sequencing, I think that's the other problem in the country. So we cannot look at a certain bill until we pass that. It might look like we're considering the risk that we need to address is the risk of inconsequential amendments or contribution amendments, and that one can manage. The chair, I think that is all from the
moment. I think this will be the opportunity for the recommendation. I think
third time in the articulation but articulated in the correct sense. So, thank you. I think we've learned the message. We'd like to see that. Thank you.
This is Parliament, as you know, Professor Jayaka, and you cannot lie. So I want to ask you, has the South African Communist Party politics ever instructed you to use the PBO to achieve one of its goals? I hope you're all satisfied. Okay, just a few quick things before a conventional round up. One, I think we should avoid being too ambitious, really. Focused on this issue quite helpfully. You see, I don't think we should be too ambitious in what we seek to do. Because now, you find Frank mentions now, let's not get too rigid. So I'm not saying this should happen, but maybe we need to have something like this. Rather than saying from 16 days to 27 days, in different circumstances, you might need just another update. So one option may be, don't chop my head off, this is merely a thing that enters my head quickly, it's tentative, it's a thought that I want a collective decision making on. Instead of saying within 25 days, why don't we say as determined by the committees after consultation of 20?
Yeah.
Or you can say within, not after order, within a month. So sometimes it can be 16 days, especially if you want to rush off on a study tour to Mongolia in early December.
Yes.
Then you suddenly everything changes, suddenly you can do things quickly, right? So let's have a bit more. Let's not go back to square one. Instead of being mechanical and extend the number of days, let's be flexible. Right, that's one point. Secondly, there are some things we can do now and some things later, having experienced the new, easier dispensation, less onerous on us. Thirdly, I think things have moved so far forward in terms of where I think we are going. So what we would like, Frank, because this is a legal, you are the main person here since you were around, right? In 2009, younger as you look. Okay, fine. So what we're going to do then, we're going to ask you to do the report, the first draft, send it to Zakele, Antonio, and Esther, and whoever else, let them comment on it. So do a report with tentative proposals. Let the PBO see it, also, after the parliamentary researchers and the South African, then they can comment, right? Then what we do is, I think, we set up a small technical subcommittee. Technical. Because the chairperson is going to be so busy with the budget. In the meanwhile, we can have a technical subcommittee led by yourself, Frank, to meet with Treasury officials, right, and discuss matters. So the next time we meet, the report is the base on which we take off. So in other words, it's not like a workshop, it's like a committee meeting, where we say, we finished off on the 8th of February here, now let's start. So people won't ask the same questions again. That's the suggestion that I've got, if members agree. Then I think we as a finance committee, we have said last year that the money bills act, apart from the budget issue, is the primary goal. It's not the goals that come from the executive. It is this. And we said in our report to Parliament, the joint committees, that the MCBPS, Comrade Pinky, in October this year, will be dealt with in terms of the new amended Money Bills Act. So we always ask the executive, you got this deadline, why didn't you fulfill it? Then we attack them, right? Well, if we don't fulfill our own deadline in October, as the Rosemary did, she will attack us, right? Speaking on behalf of the masses, you are here. We are committing ourselves that we're going to do it. So what I'm saying in short is, we have taken a decision. The final thing to say is, I engaged with Frank and others. Why are the resolutions adopted now always referring to the National Assembly? Finance Committee, not the Appropriations Committee, because you had half a stake in it. And Desmond Royan told me the reason is exact. I thought about it now after Frank spoke. Because the legislation we have to dealt with the Finance Committee primarily, since it's a bill. But we want you to play a co-equal role, never mind the resolution and so on. So we would like the Appropriations Committee also to give more attention to the specific concerns Appropriations Committees have. And we too are not, you are sensitive to this. Personally, I don't think our finances. So we'd like you to look at the report before it comes back to all of us and comment on the report so that your concerns can be addressed, even though the bill results primarily with us, and we'll try to include you as much as possible. But in short, the Money Bills Act is very important. And so therefore, this is our primary concern.
Unfortunately, having said all of that, sadly, next Tuesday, when we're going to discuss the Money Bills Act again, we had no choice about this. Beverages public hearings round two have to be included. Now, given that the First Minister coming to the bus on the 22nd or whatever, we had no choice. That was the only day left. So members, please note, this public hearing is next Tuesday on the sugar, sweet and beverages, and then on Wednesday, public hearings on the rotation of auditors. So, unfortunately, we dropped the money bills. We have to negotiate with the other three committees for another day. But we've gone so far ahead than I imagined we would, that actually it's not the end of the world. We can still meet our deadline. Ideally, we should have a bill. Let's set a target as tentative cursory consideration. So the final one, let's set a target that by the 1st of June, we will begin to have a draft document, and that the bill will be passed by both houses by the end of August. It's very ambitious, but it's fine. We may not be able to, that's why I don't think people should load the amendment process. There may have to be a two-round process. Let's start with this, and 2 years from now, God forbid the current kids will be here. They will have to be, you know, the next generation will have to make up for our messes, right? As we have to make up for the messes of a certain minister of finance. So, hey, let's pass it on to the next generation. Because of course, said, the next generation will deal with the issues of apartheid. Right. Okay. Having said that, I hand over to Comrade Charles to bring this up.
Thank you, Commissioner Karim. That was an excellent summary of the proceedings of this morning. Honourable members, that brings us to the end of the business of this workshop. The workshop is adjourned. Thank you.
He's left now.
So, you've got some work on your table, comrades. I guess this is a process. But you know what I'm fascinated with?
Thank you.